How's everyone doing? Oh, come on. I know you've got low blood sugar because you've had lunch. Enthusiasm. How are we all going? Excellent. Excellent. That's great. Okay. So, as you know, I am the Policy and Advocacy Coordinator at Blind Citizens Australia, and we're here to talk about support for over 65s this afternoon. But before we get into things, I wanted to get a bit of a sense of who's in the room. So, I'm going to call out a few categories, and if you fit into this category, then just yell out really loud and obnoxiously, that's me. Okay, so who do we have in the room that's already receiving support through the aged care system? No one. Whoop. Yes, that's you. Yep, okay, great. Who do we have in the room that's over the age of 65 or getting close to that and is thinking about starting out on their aged care journey? Yep, a lot of people there. And do we have some people who are perhaps a little bit younger and just sick of hearing about the NDIS and thought they'd come along and hear something different? Yes. Oh, really great. Thanks for being so supportive. That's excellent. Now, these sessions are always a little bit bittersweet for me because while I'm very passionate about working with all of you to make sure you get the support you need, I know the system we have to work with is very far from perfect, and I just wanted to acknowledge that up front and say that Blind Citizens Australia is working very hard at a policy level to try and make the system the best that it can be. We've got probably not just over an hour now, we've probably only got an hour, to talk about the systems that are available to provide care and support to people who are age 65 and over. And I want this to be a relatively informal discussion, so I'll give you opportunities to ask questions throughout. Just a few ground rules to start with. If you could try and be as concise as possible with your questions or comments so that as many people as possible get a chance to have a say. And please don't speak unless you're on microphone, as per usual. If you've got something to say, put your hands up and we'll make sure we get a volunteer to you with a microphone. Yep. Oh, if people could stand if they have questions, that'd be really useful just to help our volunteers with the mic running. Okay. I'll first tell you what I'd like to cover this afternoon, and it's pretty much a three-pronged approach. So firstly, I'll be providing you with some information about how the programs currently available to provide care and support to over 65s work, and answering any questions you've got around any of that. Next, we'll be talking about some of the advocacy tools and strategies you might need to think about in order to help you get the most out of the aged care system. And thirdly, I'd like to get your feedback on the types of resources BCA could be making available in the future to inform older people who are blind or vision impaired about how all of these things work. Does that sound all right to everyone? Yep. Excellent. Great. Okay. I'm sorry if you might have heard some of this before, but I think I need to kind of recap a little bit and start at the beginning for anyone who might be less familiar with this topic. So as we all know, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which is a lifetime scheme of care and support for people with disability, it commenced rollout in 2013. And there's a law that was developed to establish that scheme called the NDIS Act. It sets the parameters around how the scheme works, what it covers, and who is eligible. When that act was drafted, the government decided to introduce an age restriction under the act, which now means that only individuals who are under the age of 65, when the NDIS begins rollout in their area, will be eligible for the scheme. That was really an economic decision. I just wanted to point that out because the prevalence of disability does increase with age, and the government didn't think it could financially sustain a scheme that was available to all people with disability, irrespective of age. Not saying it's fair, but that's kind of the reason why they made that decision. I want to pause there for a minute and just see if there's anyone in the room who isn't 65 now, but will be when the NDIS becomes available in their area. Is there anyone in that category? Nope. Okay.
Yep, there's one.
Oh, there's one. Okay. Well, I'll quickly talk about this either way, even though we've only got one person, because I think it's really important for all of you to go and impart this knowledge to other people you may know who are in similar situations. So there are some early access provisions that exist under the NDIS Act, so that if you're in that situation of not being 65 yet, but by the time the NDIS gets to your area, you're going to be 65, you can make contact with the National Disability Insurance Agency now and make an early access request, and it might be that you do end up getting into the scheme. So I'm more than happy to have that conversation with you after today, if you'd like to make contact with me at the National Office. Just catching up with my notes. And on that, we're actually currently investigating a case involving an individual who most likely would have been eligible to opt into the NDIS under those early access provisions. But the window of opportunity in which he had to do that had passed, and he missed it because he wasn't aware those provisions existed. And the agency has been really not great at informing people that that's an option. So we're looking at options to pursue that further, and that might involve going to the Commonwealth Ombudsman. Any questions about early access provisions just briefly before we move on? Nope. Okay. So assuming you're not eligible for the NDIS and the option of making an early access request is off the table, how do you get the support you need? I want to talk about the aged care system a little bit and the point at which you might need to access it. And there's two main options available under My Aged Care. The first option allows you to access services through an entry-level program called the Commonwealth Home Support Program. And the second option allows you to be allocated with a package of individualised funding through a home care package. And it works in a similar way to the NDIS in many respects. We're going to have a look at these one at a time. First of all, I'd like to hear from someone in the room. We did have, I know, at least one person who's already receiving support through the aged care system. Do we have a volunteer who'd like to give us some feedback? I'd like to ask you a few questions if you're keen.
When you say aged care system, are you talking about the new My Aged Care, or are you talking about what used to be available at, like with local government? It used to be called HAC services.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a moment. But yeah. Have you had any interaction with My Aged Care?
No.
Is the question. Okay, is there anyone in the room who has? Yes? Are you happy to answer a couple of questions quickly? Are you comfortable telling us about some of the supports you're accessing so far under the scheme?
Hi there, everyone. My name's Sheila. Actually, mine only started this week.
Okay.
Because I went to a couple of seminars and I decided to call them and refer myself. Mm. But I also chose to make somebody my provider. So I was given access really from the council. They assessed me as only needing care in a bit of help with shopping and cleaning.
Okay.
So that's just started this week. So I don't know if I'm the person to actually...
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's all I'm after. Mm-hmm. So next question is, what, if anything, did you find difficult about accessing the scheme? It sounds like you might have had a little bit of support with getting your foot in the door with that system. Is that right?
Yes, I did a bit. It's very complicated. I found it very complicated. In fact, the council rang me. My aged care referred me to the council, and I knocked them back at first because I thought I had to have an ACAT assessment to even get in.
Yeah.
So I got that all wrong.
And we'll get into that in a bit more detail in a moment too. So I think what you've touched on there is there's a lot of different assessment processes. It's quite complex. It's difficult to navigate, difficult to understand, yeah?
Yes,
yep.
Indeed.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
And what advice do you have for anyone else who might just be starting out on this journey?
My advice would be, I made a mistake in the first place. So I think the process is difficult. Whilst you do the 15-minute interview over the phone and then they say, oh, someone will contact you, they don't exactly explain that you don't necessarily need an ACAT assessment to get into it because it's still state government.
Okay. We're going to unpack all of those things you've just spoken about in a bit more detail as we go along, but I just wanted to hear from someone that's already been through this system to start with, just to give everyone else in the room a bit of a sense of how complicated things are and what the challenges are that we might need to work through. And I think it's really important that we brainstorm a lot of this collectively and draw on each other's skills and support each other in this process, because I think as we've learnt already from Friday and today's sessions is that it's all about community. We need to be there to support each other.
Okay. Another question here, Laura.
Sorry? Yes, sure.
My name is Peter. I'm perhaps just a couple of weeks ahead of Sheila. I made inquiries about a seeing eye dog, and I went to Guide Dogs Australia. And while I was talking to the lady there, she said, are you on my aged care? And I said, no. So she said, look, we can take particulars and refer you to the My Age Care people. And I'm in the White Horse Council. I think they'd just gone into My Age Care. And I've had an interview with a lady who came out, very nice lady came out. I've got been told how much funding I've got, and the fact that it's just for inside the house. I haven't accessed any of these things. And the next step is that my wife is having a hip operation in a couple of months' time. And because of that, I may need some respite care, being blind. So they've got in touch with Peter James Clinic in Forest Hill, so they're coming out to interview me to see what level I'm at. So that's the step, as I say, a couple of weeks perhaps ahead of Sheila. So
yeah, great. And I hope that because you're still on that journey, you might be able to get a few things out of this session as well. So yeah, let's definitely keep in touch. All right, we've touched on the fact that there's two different levels of support available under the aged care system. Now I'm going to explain them in a bit more detail, and we'll start with the Commonwealth Home Support Program. The Commonwealth Home Support Program is an entry-level program, and it aims to bring together community services that were previously funded under the Home and Community Care Program, so HAC. Has anyone heard of that? A lot of people are receiving... Yep, okay. So it's basically just that. All it is all of those services that used to be delivered at a state level have now been brought together under one umbrella at the Commonwealth level, and it's pretty much the same thing. Those services include things like cleaning, transport, where's my mic gone? Basic garden maintenance, and occupational therapy. But there's also two specialised categories of support that exist under the Commonwealth Home Support Program that will be of particular relevance to people who are blind or vision impaired. The first is called Specialised Support, Vision Support, and it includes services like orientation and mobility, occupational therapy, and or... that's not the right word. I think Spellcheck must have made a mistake there. It says orthotics, but let's go orthoptics, I'm assuming. That's what we're going for? Okay, good. The second specialist category that may be of interest is called goods, equipment, and assistive technology. But it only provides a really limited level of funding for aids and equipment, so it's up to the value of $500. I know, it's not a lot, it's quite frustrating. What I can tell you though, at a policy level, there was an aged care legislated review that happened last year. Blind Citizens Australia prepared a submission to that particular inquiry. And the final report's been handed down, and one of the recommendations that came out of that process was that the government's looking at establishing a national aids and equipment program specifically for people with disability who are over the age of 65. So that's a positive thing, but at the moment it's just a recommendation on a piece of paper. So we need to be really active and speak out really loud and clear about the fact that this needs to happen in a timely manner, because at the moment people are missing out. Once you've been approved for the Commonwealth Home Support Program, you'll start receiving services very quickly. Your assessor will make referrals on your behalf on a needs basis. And then after you've been referred to a particular service once, you can continue to access that service as you see fit. Services accessed under the Commonwealth Home Support Program generally require a co-payment of 20% of the overall cost of that service. But at this stage, it isn't mandatory for a service provider to charge that co-payment. It is looking like the legislation around that's changing though. So it may be the case that all service providers in the future will be required to charge that co-payment. At the moment, though, it does very much depend on the service provider. A number of service providers, though, and most of them at this stage, still aren't charging a co-payment because they'd made the commitment when the NDIS rolled out that no one would be disadvantaged. That could change, as I said, but at the moment, you'll still receive things like orientation and mobility services free of charge, or you should. Yep. Has someone got a question? Could we just wait 1 minute?
It's specifically about what you just said. Does the co-payment, the 20% co-payment, sorry, does the 20% co-payment apply to home modifications as well?
Hmm, that's a very good question. I'll take that on notice.
Okay.
Yeah, great question, Lynn. I'll commit to doing a bit more research on that because obviously that could be rather expensive for something like home modifications. Yeah, and I do know that there's a few different programs that exist at a state level still to do things like home modifications. So one of the other things I wanted to highlight, even though this system at the moment is hugely problematic, there are a lot of other services available. And what I'd encourage you all to do is Blind Citizens Australia has developed state-based toolkits for each state and territory. And those toolkits include information about the different services that might be available in each state and territory that are of benefit to people who are blind or vision impaired. So it might be that you'd like to go through those documents as well and just find out if there's anything else that could supplement what you're receiving through the aged care system.
Okay. If I could just say my one and only brush with the system so far has been to have a referral to home modifications, and I, about 2 days ago, received a quotation for a handrail on some stairs, and if that was a 20% co-payment, then they would be the most expensive handrail that's ever been constructed in Australia.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Right. So if you think you'd like to access support through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, you need to call the My Aged Care Contact Centre and ask to be referred for what's known as a RAS assessment. And RAS stands for Regional Assessment Service. The sorts of questions you'll be asked during that assessment are really generalised though, and they don't focus on disability-related needs at all. So what we need to do is reframe the way we think about things in order to make sure everyone gets the support they need. We'll be exploring that in a little more detail a bit later. But first, I'll take a couple of questions just around the Commonwealth Home Support Program, if there are any. So I need those questions to be very much related to that program because we'll touch on other things as we go along. Do we have any questions? Yep.
Hi, it's Ramona Mandy. A couple of questions and a comment.
Yep.
Firstly, regarding the CHSP, my understanding was that regarding finances, it was $500, but if you had an OT right that this was essential for your independence, it could be up to $1,000. That was my understanding from when I worked for an adaptive technology company.
Mm.
My question is, my understanding was that most of those CHSP services are delivered and coordinated by the council. Is that correct? And thirdly, if you can hold three questions, my understanding was that in Victoria, the RASs are called ACAS, ACAS, Assessment
okay.
Services. Or is that only ACATS for the other package?
Okay, I've only heard the assessments for Commonwealth Home Support Program being referred to as RAS assessments, but it is entirely possible that they're using other terms in different areas. So as you've touched on there, it's the other level of support, which is the home care package. You require what's called an ACAT assessment, and I'll go into that in a bit more detail in a moment. Coming back to your first question, it's the complication with the aged care system is that it's so complex that I'm still trying to get my head around it as well. So it's interesting to note, Ramona, that your experience has been that if you write an OT's report that demonstrates that you need a particular piece of equipment, you can receive up to $1,000 in funding. So I'd be really interested to have a conversation with you afterwards and follow this up with the people at the Department of Health. The other frustrating thing, I've kind of observed, I think the people that work at Telstra and Centrelink, they kind of move them around. They must also work for the aged care system because they're just as frustrating as each other. You get a different answer depending on who you talk to. So it's been really difficult. And I was actually almost in tears the other day when I was trying to do a bit of background research for this system because I was on the phone to the My Aged Care Contact Centre and I was having a bit of trouble finding out some particular piece of information I needed to confirm. And I said to them, look, can you just send me a link to this page because I cannot find it on your website, and explain the fact that I was blind using screen reading software. And she just kept saying, yes, yes, it's highlighted in a different colour. It's So, yeah, it's not fun. What was your third question?
My second question was, is it correct that most of the CHSP services are coordinated and delivered from councils?
Yeah, so regional assessment services are basically, they're privately contracted services, and it is kind of at a local government level. Yes, that's right. Do we have another question?
Hi, it's Mick Baker here. Lauren,
yep.
I'm just wondering, who do you originally contact to get onto the Commonwealth Home Support? Is that the My Aged Care hotline or is that
yes.
another?
Yeah, so the My Aged Care contact centre.
All right. So a service provider could put you through to them?
Absolutely,
as well.
They could. Yep.
And
they
should.
Can do that for you as well. So if you're already connected with a particular service provider, then you can ask them to support you through that process. And I've had conversations with the main blindness agencies in this space, and they are very much supporting people through that process.
Okay,
we might move on. So the defining feature of the Commonwealth Home Support Program is that services delivered to a client are, in total, generally lower than the cost or volume that would be provided in a home care package per annum. So that's the other level, which we'll talk about in a moment. Clients who do require higher levels of ongoing care and support would probably be better off going for the home care package and not staying on that entry-level Commonwealth Home Support Program. Another characteristic of the Commonwealth Home Support Program relates to the case management needs of the client. So if you need ongoing case management or someone to kind of coordinate your services for you, then you'll probably be better going off with a home care package as well rather than sticking with that entry-level program. And another thing to be mindful of is that your choice of service providers under the Commonwealth Home Support Program is a lot more limited because you can only choose from a range of government-approved providers who have been funded to deliver supports under the Commonwealth Home Support Program. Whereas if you get a home care package, you've got a bit more flexibility in how you decide to use that money and which service providers you wish to engage with. As I said earlier, home care packages are person-centred funding packages. They're designed to enable older people to continue to live in their own homes and participate in community activities for as long as possible. If you're provided with one of these packages, you receive a package of funding, and as I said, you can spend it on services and supports that meet your age or disability-related needs. Home care packages can include things like personal support, such as assistance with bathing or getting dressed, domestic support, such as assistance with cleaning or shopping, provision of meals or other food services, assistance with transports, for example, to be able to attend appointments or other activities within the community, social support, such as assistance with recreational or physical activities, counselling, and provision of aids and equipment, and also home maintenance and modifications. Because home care packages are intended to be consumer-directed, they also provide more flexibility to fund blindness-specific services and supports, such as costs that are incurred as a result of using a dog guide for mobility. Those sorts of things can't be funded under that Commonwealth Home Support Program, so the entry-level program. You'll generally be required to pay a co-payment for your home care package, and the maximum daily basic fee for a home care package is around $10 a day, or you could be asked to pay more depending on your income and assets. But there's also hardship provisions available for people who don't actually have the means to make a financial contribution to their care and support arrangements. One of the great inequities of this whole arrangement is that, unlike the NDIS, this is not an uncapped scheme. So there's a priority wait list for home care packages because there aren't actually enough available. And you might actually be on the waiting list for quite a long time. But what you can do is you can start accessing support under the Commonwealth Home Support Program, which is, again, the entry-level program, and you can still be receiving services while you're waiting for a home care package to be allocated to you. If you'd like to apply for a home care package, you need to be assessed by the Comprehensive Assessment Team, which was previously known as the Aged Care Assessment Team. Sometimes they're still using that term. And again, you'll need to contact the My Aged Care Contact Centre to be referred for one of those assessments. And you can, if you think that a home care package is what you need from the outset, you don't have to go through that entry-level program first and that assessment process. It could be that once you explain your care and support needs to the people at the My Aged Care Contact Centre, they say, yes, we think that a home care package would better suit your needs, so we'll refer you straight for that comprehensive assessment. Okay, I'm going to stop there and just take two questions if we have any. And then after that, I want to move into the more practical side of this session, where I'll be looking at the two assessment processes and the things you might need to do to prepare for these. So do we have a question? So about home care packages specifically. Yep.
Lauren, it's Ramona again. In terms of the aids and equipment component of the HCP,
yep.
Do you know if there's any amounts, caps, restrictions, etc.?
There are. There's a set of guidelines which I still can't read because they're not in the right format. So, yes, there are provisions around what can be funded and what can't be funded, and I'm still trying to work out the complexities around that. So I'm sorry I can't provide you with more clarity on that at the moment, Ramona, but I am very much looking into it.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.
Lauren, I just wanted to go back to something you said about co-payments.
Mm.
And I've been trying to understand what you, not just what you said, but I've been trying to understand the same information. You said a co-payment is required, and then you said
daily
a
basic
maximum
fee?
Of $10 a day.
That's not a maximum, that's the minimum.
Oh, that's the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what the first thing I don't really understand is what $10 a day actually means. If you're not receiving a service that's, you know, provided on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
if, for instance, coming back to the home modifications thing again, it's actually a particular thing which is being done, then I don't understand what a daily fee means. And the other thing is, you said, is there no ceiling? You said that there was a provision for people who can't make any contribution at all, but is there no ceiling to how high it can go?
I don't know if there's a... Oh, there is, actually. There is a table that exists, and it's actually on our website. We've got a dedicated page that's looking at care and support for over 65s, and there's a table that explains what you can be charged depending on what income bracket you fall into. So that has been a little more clearly defined. In regards to your first question, it's something that we still need to tease out in a bit more detail, because I think this daily basic fee, like say if you need assistance with showering once a day or something, that's a little more clearly defined. So, you know, a daily basic fee, that makes sense. But when your needs are episodic and you might need community transport once a week, once a fortnight, whatever that might be, it's kind of a bit unjust to be charging someone $70 a week, which is what it is, to be accessing that support on a fairly infrequent basis. So I'd need to get a little bit more clarity around that, Lynn, and I'd really like to hear from anyone who is on a home care package, but it doesn't sound like we've got anyone here today who's that far along on the journey, is that right?
It's Ramona again. I've been doing a lot of research on behalf of another, and with the home care package, the My Aged Care website says that on average you'll pay 17.5% of your package,
yeah.
So that depends on the level, for your co-contribution. Now, that might be paid weekly, monthly, I don't know, but it seems to be, that's on average, unless you're, you know, assessed as, you know, hard, you know, you've got financial circumstances where you can't pay, or, you know, that the income assessment test that you have to do assesses you as being, you know, rolling in money. So, but the average is 17.5.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of, there's four different funding levels that are available under the home care package system. And depending on how high your support needs are, you'll receive a different level of funding. So, yeah, it's kind of like 17.5% of that overall package is what you'll have to pay, what your contribution would be.
Hi. Just to add to that conversation there, with the home maintenance in that council levels, CHSP, so if you got home maintenance, there are two aspects to the invoice. There's a materials purchased, so that's the actual material, and then there's the actual cost service pay, if that's of any help, and that's that co-payment.
Okay, great. Okay, so I mentioned earlier that we need to reframe the way that we think about some of the questions we're likely to be asked in the assessment process. For example, I'm going to ask all of you two questions that you're likely to come up against in either a RAS assessment, which is the one for that entry-level program, or a comprehensive assessment, which is the assessment for the home care package. And feel free to just yell out the answer, or just think about how you might answer these questions if you'd rather keep them to yourself. Okay, first question. Do you need assistance with showering or bathing? Okay. Next question. Do you need assistance to dress yourself?
Yes.
Okay, someone said yes. Yep.
I think we're doing ourselves an injustice here, and to say that we can dress ourselves is probably being a little bit incorrect. We may get our brown and black shoes confused and head out with one of each. What does it actually mean by dress yourself? And what does it mean by medication? Can you read? Does that mean you can read what's written on the bottles? I think we're being, we're probably missing out on some funding.
You've hit the nail on the
head. If we say that we can do all these things.
Absolutely.
I think we've got to be truthful.
Absolutely. So, Lynn, you had a comment too, I think, didn't you?
I did, actually, because it's something I learned from attending an NDIS workshop a while ago and listening to someone who was already participating in the pilot program. And Lauren, I know that you've heard this too. It was about exactly these questions. And in particular, what led me to think about it was the can you dress yourself? Mm. And my initial response was pretty much as I think most of the responses here were. It was rather indignant. Yes, of course I can. Mm. But having listened to this person talking about his NDIS plan, I rethought that in the way that's just been talked about. And I thought, well, actually, I can't entirely independently dress myself. I can't check the details the example that was given was that your shoes are matching if you happen to have shoes that are the same but different colours. I think things about the colour of your clothes, whether they need dry cleaning, all that sort of stuff. But in addition to that, I can't independently shop for my own clothes either. So when I started to think about the question of whether I could dress myself in a somewhat more appropriate, a way that's more appropriate to vision impairment and less dependent on understanding disability as physical disability, I began to realise that actually I thought the answer to the question was, yes, I did need assistance.
Absolutely. So you've hit the nail on the head as well. We need to, these questions aren't really well suited to our particular set of circumstances, but we need to be able to know how to use these questions to talk about the specific challenges that are unique to blindness or vision impairment. So even the question which I asked first, which was, do you need assistance with showering or bathing? How do you actually go about buying your shampoo and conditioner? And then how do you tell which is which when you get them home? I know, but does someone need to... How do you find out which is which to start with? Okay. But there are challenges, right? It's not something that you can just do as easily as someone with sight. So it's just an avenue for which you can, you can use those questions to the best of your advantage to start talking about, well, these are the specific things that I find difficult in that environment. So we need to be thinking outside the square a little bit. It's really important. And I think, Lynn, you've kind of learnt that going through this journey. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, this gives you a bit more of an idea of how we need to be thinking a little bit differently in order to capture our vision-related needs under such a generic assessment process. But it's also really important to do a bit of pre-planning, to think about the sorts of things you need in advance. So what I want you to think about now is unmet need. Are there things that you'd like to be doing that you aren't doing now, and what would it actually take to make these things happen? I think sometimes we can also assume that we don't need help because we might have another family member or friend who can assist us with certain things. But think about whether you'd like to have the means of doing those things independent of those other people, and if you don't, that's fine. But what would you do if you found yourself in a situation where that person who might usually help you with certain things was either unwell or was unavailable for some other reason? I want you to turn to one of the people next to you now, or work in threes or larger groups if you like, whatever you're comfortable with, and talk about what some of your unmet needs might be. So again, these are the supports that are missing in your life at the moment, but the supports you still require to enable you to do the things that you want and need to do. Okay, I might get you to stop there, but it sounds like everyone's having some really great discussions, so I would encourage you to keep having those conversations throughout the rest of the weekend. People, pay attention, come on. Where's my bell? Pay attention to me. Very good, thank you. I was going to say eyes to the front, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Okay. So I might just get a couple of people to feed back. How many tables do we have people at? Scattered everywhere. Okay. All right. I'll just selectively pick a couple of people. Is there a Barry Chapman in the room?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Who were you speaking with, Barry?
Barry.
And Barry, what kind of things did the two of you come up with?
Well, in terms of unmet needs, I don't know that I really came up with any specifically, because like any needs, I've generally found a way around, sometimes more successfully than others, I guess. But in terms of... So I guess there's nothing that I can really say that is desperately unmet. But there are issues that we've got to deal with, which we've discussed lots of, like things I don't get any my aged care service at the moment, but I do have someone privately come in and do cleaning and ironing, and part of the ironing is that although I wash my own clothes, it's part of the deal is there that she tells me if there's stains on things that haven't come out in the wash, and we can spray them with some preen or whatever, and then rewash them. But that, as I say, is a private arrangement. But whether I could get those sort of things under my aged care, and what the rules are in terms of income and that sort of thing, because I'm sort of I wouldn't say I'm rich, but I'm sort of in a reasonably comfortable
Barry's
position, I
guess.
Barry's
picking up the bar tab tonight. Thanks, Barry. Awesome.
So I guess that's me. So we'll hand over to Murray. Well, she can add into what said from our side. Do you want to say something,
Murray? I was much the same as Barry in that I have someone to come and clean, and I will ask them, you know, anything that I want looked at. But I think I had an experience of, I used to get some help from a neighbour aid service for a couple of hours a fortnight for reading mail, etc. And the circumstances I went, that lapsed for a while, and when I went back to it, they said, oh, you can't get it directly from us now. You have to go through my aged care. Mm. I didn't pay for it before, and I don't pay for it now.
Okay.
But they control selecting the person and recording that to the government. And I registered for that, but I haven't taken the registration any further.
Mm.
And I could use probably help with things like some. I've always had shopping assistance through community transport, etc., but I didn't have to, because it was continuous, I didn't have to make any changes with that. But if I wanted to take the step further and use one of the cleaning services through my aged care, would I have to go through a further registration process?
Probably, yes, yeah. Is the short answer. Yeah. So I think it's really important for us to understand that all of the things that the two of you have spoken about already, so Barry and Mari, those services are very much funded under the NDIS. So I want to use that as the benchmark. If it's good enough for people who are under 65, it's good enough for all of you, as far as I'm concerned. So you need to be telling us if they then turn around and say, well, no, you can't get that under the aged care system because it's not okay.
Yes. Okay. Because also assistance with shopping for things other than food services and related things like that, that isn't covered by the scheme I get my shopping done.
Yeah, well, and it should be under the aged care system.
With the transport, but not the assistance to shop.
Yeah, and it should be. So even under the entry level program, that Commonwealth Home Support program, you should be able to get 4 hours of assistance. I don't know if it's a week or a fortnight. I can't remember right now. Is it a fortnight? Fortnight, yeah, which isn't a lot, but under a home care package, you can definitely get more than that because it's very much tailored around your specific support needs. I'll take a quick comment from someone else in the room who's really...
Just a quick thing, Lauren, yep. And it's not good enough if they say, oh, it's not available. It's not good enough for them to say, oh, you can get a volunteer.
Mm.
Because that's what they do sometimes. They say, oh, you can, oh, we'll get you a volunteer.
No, that's definitely not good enough. Do we have anyone who feels really passionate about the topic of unmet need and would like to feedback quickly before we move on?
I think planning ahead, this is the whole principle behind this. It's not just what you need now. You have to look at, I'm at almost 77, the next 5 to 10 years, how to gather that together in the principles of requirements with going a bit deaf, being totally blind, and having a dog to manage, shopping and everything that has when you have your own home. And I just have an age pension. I don't have anything extra.
Mm.
And I've had the Commonwealth Centrelink phone me recently asking me the value of my house, along with my financial statements.
Okay.
And that included my funeral fund, which is sitting in the bank. And I said, no, that's for my funeral. Are you going to be paying it if you want to know that in your system? True. And this was from Centrelink. Prior to that, 10 days ago, I had a return letter from Centrelink telling me my increase of my my monthly fee from $18 to $27 plus $10 a day when I get a package.
Mm.
And that's how it sits right now.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to have a conversation with you after this because it'd be great to tease that out a little bit more and see what we can be doing to help support you. Thank you. Yep, really quickly, Lynn. Thanks.
Thank you. About unmet need again, but it's a different kind of unmet need. I think there are quite a few people who are probably fairly dependent, as you've already mentioned, on a family member, and in many instances it would be a spouse or a partner, who provide quite a lot of assistance one way and another. And I think there are two things that I'd like to say about that. One is that we're talking about people over the age of 65, and I think one of the things we know is that there's a much higher percentage of people in that age group who live on their own, either they always have done or by choice, but particularly because of the death of a partner. So that's one thing, that even if we have the assistance of someone with whom we live at this particular point in time, there's a very high chance that we won't have at some time in the near future, probably. Mm. But the other thing, which is a bit more complicated, and I know you and I have talked about this, Lauren, is untangling personal assistance from personal partnership or personal relationships. And I don't think that on the whole in the past people who are blind and vision impaired or collectively have been very good at thinking about those issues, and it's time we were, that our partners shouldn't be defined as our care providers, and that when we're thinking about need and unmet need, that we actually think about our needs quite separately from our personal relationships. Mm. We can, if we want to, have, you know, conflate the two, but we shouldn't have to.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Lynn. Thank you. And I'd ask you to keep the microphone because I'm going to talk to you in just a second. We're fast running out of time, though. We'll have to come back to questions, sorry, because we are running out of time. But I wanted to talk about advocacy because I'm going to be really honest. The people who are undertaking these assessments don't necessarily know everything they're supposed to know. And while it's extremely frustrating and we're trying to improve it, it's all we've got to work with at the moment. And we need to make the most of what we've got and see if we can get everything we can out of this system. So, Lynn, I had the absolute pleasure of dialing into your RAS assessment and your comprehensive assessment. And we kind of went through that journey together because it was new for me, it was new for you, and it was an opportunity for us both to try and get our heads around this system. And there are a couple of things that didn't go according to plan in that process, none of which were your fault. And I want to talk about those so that as a group, we can try and brainstorm all the things we might need to do when going into any of these assessment processes in the future. So Lynn, your assessor came to your home to conduct your assessment. That's a good point to note firstly, is that you can have someone come to your home to do this. And yes, if you do want a support person or an advocate to dial into that meeting, that option's available, or you can also have a support person assist you face to face. Okay, one of the first things I remember from your RAS assessment was that even though the assessor knew in advance that you were blind, she brought a number of written things with her that explained how the Commonwealth Home Support Program worked and the different sorts of services that were available. Did you have access to any information about the assessment process in your preferred format, Lynn, in advance? Oh, can we please get a mic to Lynn?
Yeah, I've got one. Yep. I suppose I'd have to answer by saying there would have been information available on the website, but I didn't actually do that research beforehand. I certainly wasn't given anything in an accessible format, and I think following that assessment, I actually asked, that's right, when we decided to go to the second step and have an ACAT assessment, I asked if I could be sent information in a format that I could read about the kinds of things we would be discussing in that assessment. What I received was something that I think was actually intended for the assessors themselves. It was about 150 pages in length, mm-hmm. and it was vaguely accessible. That's the best I can say.
Yeah.
But no, on the whole, I didn't. And I don't think at any stage any account was taken of the fact that I was blind.
No. Okay. Thanks, Lynn. And one of the other things I remember is that the assessor didn't have a lot of awareness of blindness services specifically. And so nice as she was actually quite lovely, your RAS assessor. She made a few assumptions about how funding for things like aids and equipment might work. That was my recollection. Yeah. Can you speak to that at all, Lynn?
Yes, I do actually remember. I didn't remember which of the two assessors it was, but I do remember that whoever it was assumed they knew of Vision Australia, and they assumed that Vision Australia paid for everything. So everything I needed was paid for by Vision Australia, and they were really shocked to discover not only the price of things like JAWS and, I don't have to say, I mean, we all know, not only the price, but the fact that actually I had to pay for them myself.
Yep, okay. And also you were told a couple of things that weren't totally correct. So were you told about the two specialist support categories I spoke about earlier under the Commonwealth Home Support Program?
Absolutely not. At no stage. No.
Okay. And my recollection, in fact, was that you were told there was absolutely no funding for aids and equipment at that Commonwealth Home Support Program level. Mm-hmm. And they didn't mention the fact that orientation and mobility could be funded at that level either.
Not at all.
No. Okay. So This is pretty frustrating because it's highlighting the fact that you all need to have the right language to know what to ask for, because you can't rely on the assessors to do it for you, which is very annoying, and we're trying to get to the bottom of it. But that's very much what this session is about. Lynn, before I move on, what advice would you have for anyone else who's about to embark on this journey?
Definitely do some homework. I'd also like to say get enraged, because I do feel really enraged about the fact that we know so little. It's so hard to find out. And, you know, I've sat in so many meetings, including today, where there's a lot of discussion about the NDIS, and I've become very aware over time that there have been real attempts to prepare people for the NDIS, you know, to have workshops where people can, you know, really rehearse the planning process, I suppose, and get assistance with the planning process and know what to expect and so on. There's nothing like that for my aged care. So I think getting enraged, that's not going to help us as individually, to be an enraged individual during your assessment. But I think for us to be collectively enraged about this, and I also think about the fact that we have to pay for things which under the NDIS people don't have to pay for. And if anything, I would say that people over 65 probably have fewer financial resources rather than more. I'm not sure about that. I think there are reasons to be enraged. So collectively, I'd say get enraged. Individually, do as much homework and preparation as you can. And I did try to do some. I thought I was reasonably well informed about my aged care.
I don't know if anyone is.
But
Lynn,
I was, I might have been informed to a reasonable degree, but it wasn't well informed. Mm. And I also had the benefit of Lauren sitting in by telephone on both of my assessments, and that was incredibly helpful. But it didn't, well, so far it hasn't really helped very much, because the fact is I don't think either of the assessors were possessed of the information about, you know, some of the special arrangements that apparently do exist in relation to blindness and vision impairment, and they didn't know anything about blindness and vision impairment. So it didn't help. Preparation didn't actually help all that much in a way, except, you know, maybe to ask a few awkward questions, because they didn't really know themselves.
Okay, thanks for that, Lynn. We're running out of time, which is really frustrating, because I'd love to just keep doing this for another 3 hours, really. But in small groups, I'm just going to give you a couple of minutes to talk amongst yourselves. And what I want you to do is try and come up with as many strategies as you can that would help to ensure you have all the information you need before you go into the assessment process, and you can get everything you need out of the assessment process. And also think about what you might need to do to make sure you know how to follow up with your assessor in case they don't end up doing all of the things they tell you they're going to do. So just take a couple of minutes to talk to the person next to you, or work in tables or small groups. All right, I'm going to have to stop you there. Thanks, everyone. Okay. This is a conversation I want to keep having, and one of the things I wanted to say was after this conference, I'll be organising a couple of teleconferences specifically to talk about aged care issues. So please come along to those. We'll be advertising them, so keep abreast of what's happening. And unfortunately, I'm not going to have a chance to get you all to feedback. I'd love to do that, but we're running out of time very quickly. But I want to highlight a couple of things. First of all, you can get help going through these journeys. So if you'd like to have support people or support to get your name onto the system and to do these assessments, then if you have a good relationship with a service provider, then talk to them because they can guide you through that process. And as I said earlier, I've spoken to a number of blindness service providers already who are being really proactive about how they support clients. So that's really fantastic. There's also Blind Citizens Australia. We're happy to have a chat to anyone who needs a bit more support. Our advocacy officer, Ricky Chaplin, is just incredible at his job. So I highly recommend that if you want a bit of support and you'd like someone to dial into your assessment, then give Ricky a call. And if things don't go according to plan, there's a couple of options as well. So there are aged care advocacy services, and I've got a meeting, the body that's been set up to deliver aged care advocacy nationally, I've got a meeting with their CEO on Monday, in fact, to talk about how they plan to ensure that disability-specific needs are covered and advocate for people in that process. There's also the Aged Care Complaints Commissioner that you can go to if you have an issue with a service provider under the aged care system. And there's a few other mechanisms as well. So if we have time for a couple of quick comments, I'm not sure if we do or we don't, but I just want to hear if you have a comment about what BCA can do in terms of making resources available to people, whether it's interviews with service providers, whether it's fact sheets, what do you need from us to get your head around this stuff? Yep. Fact sheets?
It's Robin. Yeah. I think the fact, Sheila just said the fact sheets would be good. My question is, if you go on the aged care and you haven't done your ACAP or haven't got to your ACAP, and let's say that unfortunately you had either a stroke or a heart attack, how easy is it to get up to the top of the ACAP list?
Look, if you've had a stroke and you've got really high support needs, you're going to get your foot in the door much quicker. It is a priority wait list. And I think the issue we have as people who are blind or vision impaired is in the grand scheme of things in the aged care spectrum, our support needs are relatively low. So they prioritise people who, if they're not going to get support tomorrow, they may be dead the next day. That is the hard and fast reality. So people have been on waiting lists for home care packages for, 12 to 18 months if it is that their only need is based around the fact that they're blind or vision impaired. But if you have higher support needs, if you've had a stroke, for example, you would get in quicker.
Hi, I've had two strokes and I haven't had that assistance. I've had to do the recovery and rehabilitation entirely on my own initiative. Guts and courage. Mm. Guts and courage, you have to have them, because basically you're going to have to battle it out on your own. Because I was actually told in hospital with the stroke, oh, at your age, we can't do anything for you.
I'm really sorry to hear the hospital told you that, because that's not correct and it's atrocious, quite frankly.
Oh, I know it's not correct, but that's what I was told.
Yeah, look, I know.
Actually,
and we are
by the speech therapist.
Yeah, sorry, I'm going to have to stop you there just because we are at time, and I apologise to everyone because I know this session has been really rushed and it's a very complex system. We could talk about this for a lot longer and we will talk about it a lot more. So as I said, we're going to arrange some teleconferences and we really want to dedicate time to this issue, because I think the NDIS has received a lot of airtime, but this hasn't received enough. So we're very committed to engaging in this issue on an ongoing basis and trying to get you the best support we can. So thank you, everyone, for your participation.